first months of Ramadan, which was replete with spirituality. During this months of Ramadan, we had recitations of the Holy Quran. We could see that and feel that all around the nation, reciting the Quranic verses, contemplating and delving into its concepts, and also the iftar special ceremonies in mosques and religious centers, in public places, out on the streets, and participation in special prayer services, you know, intense participation of the people, especially the youth who took part in special prayer ceremonies. In the months of Ramadan, we could feel these closely and see them for ourselves. People from all walks of life participated in the ceremonies. They availed themselves of the special prayers, and they prayed to their God, and they spoke to Him, and they asked, they made a request to Him, and they put their reliance on the Almighty God, and they availed themselves of the blessings of this month. Those who benefited from the holy month, hopefully they will use that and build up on that during the rest of the year, and would keep their hearts cleansed and pure, and hopefully until the next year's Ramadan, they will maintain this spirituality. The month of Ramadan, hopefully they will go one step higher. The end of the month of Ramadan, actually, culminated in this great and meaningful demonstration. On the last Friday of the Ramadan, people embarked in this great move. That's what the Iranian nation did, by taking part in the demonstration, that huge rally. Messages were conveyed and relayed to the entire world. Those who need to understand and get to understand the Iranian people, definitely they could have learned lessons and messages from the great popular participation during the Universal Quds Day. People were able to get themselves heard, and that was a great thing that was done. Now you have this spiritual growth, which is intermingled with political efforts, which is faith-based. This is the accomplishment of the Ramadan that we just spent. So we should maintain this. It's Eid al-Fitr today, so let's ask the Almighty God to offer His assistance, that God willing, you will be able to maintain and safeguard these great accomplishments for yourself, for your nation, and for the future. Now this is the beginning of the second sermon, by saluting the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, peace be upon him, Jafar bin Muhammad al-Sadiq, Musa bin Jafar. saluting the Prophet of Islam and the 12 Shi'i Imams in Arabic. In the second sermon, there is another aspect of the month of Ramadan that we just spent. The sweetness of the month of Ramadan was what the people in Iran and other countries experienced, but the bitterness of the same month was also, you know, we also had this bitter taste in our mouths, and that was thanks to the bloody events in Gaza, Lebanon, and Palestine. Again, genocide was raging, child killing was there, and once again, U.S. support for wicked crimes of the corrupt occupation regime. Slogans of death to America. Once again, contributing to the adventurism and crimes of the bunch of terrorists who have occupied, have Palestine under the occupation today, and they are ruling over the land and people of Palestine. They were offered assistance. They were given support. Now, in the claims made by the political claims that the Western officials make, repeatedly you have heard that they mention proxy forces. The brave nations of the region, the courageous youths of the region are accused of being proxy forces. Now, I want to tell them that in this region, there is only one proxy force, and that's the Zionist occupation corrupt regime. Death to Israel. Well, the Zionist regime, on behalf of colonizers, embarks on genocide, warmongering, committing crimes, and if they are able, they would even make aggression against other countries, like what they're doing against Syria these days. They enter Syrian soil, and they've even advanced on to a few kilometers from capital Damascus. This is what they are doing as proxy force of the colonizers. Those who, after the World War, they focused on this region, they started interventions, and this is what they have done to this region. Now, the Zionist regime is following up on their footsteps and on their behalf, completing their project. And the comments that colonizers make, I mean, these same individuals who are ruling the world in different countries with their money, with their media help. So in their words, terrorism is considered a crime. Terrorism is called a crime. But for this occupation regime, terrorism is something permissible. I mean, when others defend their rights, when others farmers defend their soil, they are called terrorists. But when the corrupt Zionist regime openly embarks in genocide and killing children and beating up the people and murdering and assassinating individuals, and they say that we have been responsible for this assassination, still the eyes of Western colonizers are closed on all this. They even smile at them, and they even offer them assistance and give it support. So since years ago, the Zionist regime, apart from the mass killings in Palestinian towns and villages that started from those early days and have continued to date, one thing that they have often done on top of that is assassinating individuals. Abu Jahat, for instance, was murdered in Tunisia. Fatih Jarari was assassinated in Cyprus. Ahmad Yassin was assassinated in Gaza. Ahmad Mournier was assassinated in Syria. And a large number of Iraqi scientists are assassinated in Baghdad. Not after the arrival of the U.S. forces there 20 years later. Nuclear scientists are assassinated here in Tehran. What they do and the actions they take, this is blatant terrorism out there for everyone to see. And this is what America supports. Western governments, a number of them support them, and others just suffice to standing by and watching. In less than 2 years, some 20,000 children were killed by the Zionist regime. Their parents are mourning for their loss. Those who chant human rights slogans, they're just standing by. They're taking no action, just watching. So the world people are outraged, as far as I know, as far as they know, of the crimes and what's happened. Many people are not informed of the scale of the crimes committed. You see that on the streets in Europe and America, they are chanting slogans against the Zionist regime. It's just on the back of the limited information that they have. If they know more, they will even take bigger action. So, I want to come to this conclusion that this criminal group needs to be uprooted from Palestine. Assistance of the Almighty God, they will be uprooted, and making efforts in that direction is a responsibility. It's both a religious responsibility and a moral one, a human one. All of us, it's incumbent on all of us to work and to make efforts so that this vicious and wicked criminal entity would be eradicated from this region. Our standpoints, for everyone to know, our stances have been the same as they were. The enmity of the Zionist regime in America is also the same. They threaten us that they will take action. Of course, if they take any action, if they are adventurous, if they do anything, we don't think that anything would happen from outside, but if that happens, definitely they will be reciprocated by a great blow. And if they are thinking of sowing sedition inside the country, like in the past, the people of Iran themselves will give them the response that they deserve, like they have already done in the past. People say that they are prepared. Almighty God, prosperity and success. The few verses of the Holy Quran at the end of the second sermon.
Welcome back, dear listeners. What you heard was leader of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khamenei, speaking during the sermons of Eid al-Fitr prayers. During his speech, Imam Khamenei said, "I congratulate the entire Muslim community on Eid al-Fitr and great Iranian people on New Persian Year." The leader of the Islamic Revolution said, "Fasting month of Ramadan is one of the greatest divine blessings." He said, "Magnificent Quds Day rallies sent message to those who seek to recognize Iranian nation." Imam Khamenei said, "The Zionist regime on behalf of colonizers embarks on genocide and violates Syrian sovereignty." He said, "The eyes of colonizers are close to mass killings by the Zionist regime. They even smile on them." Imam Khamenei said, "The United States and Western governments are supporting blatant terrorism by the Zionist regime." He said, "This criminal group of Zionists has to be uprooted from Palestine." Many thanks for being with us.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is Arabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir. iranradio.ir. We'll be right back.
and welcome to the Israel Watch. The Hebrew media has focused on internal Israeli divisions and escalating conflicts following the dismissal of the head of the Shin Bet and the administration's legal advisor. Additionally, the repercussions from the captive video released by Hamas, the resumption of military aggression on Gaza, and growing Israeli concerns over missiles launched from Yemen were also topics of interest in Hebrew media. We discuss these issues with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts. Hello and welcome to this episode, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you for having me. Good morning to you.
I will start with the internal divisions within the Israeli entity. One manifestation of these divisions within the Israeli entity was the physical assault on the Shin Bet chief by Ben-Gavir, which was described as a scandal by a Knesset member. Dr. Mohsen, to begin with, in your own opinion, how far have things escalated within the Israeli entity, seeing all these demonstrations that are seen as one of the largest in Israel?
Well, I guess this is the beginning. The Israeli division, the internal division between these extremists and terrorists of Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, and
right wing,
these parties, and the military operation system also, they have this this differences in the philosophical and theoretical understanding of the duty of Israel and its army. That's why Ben-Gvir doesn't understand what kind of mentality the chief of Shin Bet and even the military work, and also
they didn't expect all the support Shin Bet.
Of course, they don't expect that, and also they have different understanding and vision towards the job of each of them. While Ben-Gvir wants to confiscate everything, wants to ruin everything, and want to build settlements and want to invade Gaza, and that doesn't work. Shin Bet, they know how to deal with things in terms of the intelligence
but
services.
It's a fierce,
and work.
It's seen as a fierce campaign against the dismissal of Shin Bet.
Of course, because they want the Haridim, or they want these people to be in the military, and they want to have some acts on the ground, and they don't. They don't have this. They just talk to the people, and they talk religious words, and they about terrorism and extremism, and they don't pay any attention towards the people feelings and emotions, especially the people who have hostages still there in Gaza. And I guess the Shin Bet, they blame intrinsically, they blame Netanyahu because of the increase of the power of Hamas, because of the Qataris money they received, and it's been told that some of his cabinet, some of his bureau staff, they also benefited from this money, and they were corrupted, and they were taking some money from the Qataris. And the Shin Bet, they have all these
documents
to blame Ben-Gvir and Netanyahu.
So it's for personal issues.
It's for corrupt issue. That's why I'm saying it's very deep, this one, especially this one, in terms of...
Do you think more information will be uncovered within the coming days? Something similar to the information that you're sharing with
us? Absolutely. That means when Ben-Gvir attacks physically this man of Shin Bet, that means it's been encouraged. It's being encouraged by Netanyahu and by the cabinet in order to do so, because they have this something to hide.
And do you
something
think that the Israelis actually understand this?
They will.
They understand that there is something.
Well, that's why we have seen demonstrations.
Corruption.
One of the great or numerous numbers of the people went to the streets in Al Quds and other places to help or to approve Shin Bet, and they even the legal advisor wanted to stop this legislative or this order of Netanyahu in order to find somebody else and to remove the Shin Bet chief from the
responsibility. Meanwhile, Hamas is waging a psychological war through the issue of captives and the video it released of the two captives. This in addition to the missiles launched by Yemenis deep into occupied Zionist territory. In your opinion, what psychological impact do Al-Qassam videos about the captives have on the Israelis, especially the latest one?
Well, I would say that this video will increase, will accelerate this feelings and the psychological understanding of the situation.
Will fuel the demonstrations, Dr. Mohsen.
Will fuel and will also increase the anti-Netanyahu and anti-this cabinet, Ben-Gvir, and the extremists and their position from the captives. And I guess
and the timing the of the release of this
The financial issue, the Shin Bet issue, the intelligence service issue, the hostage issue, and all these demonstrations, and also Gaza. We know Hamas is still in power in Gaza. And they can do nothing. As he said, we should wake up because they are not understanding. They have no awareness of what's going on inside Israel. These are from the repercussions of the war. And if they want to go back to war in Gaza, that means there are other calculations for their political and for their understanding in the world. I guess the international community not only they hate Israel now after killing 15,000 children, and they in 1 week or less than 1 week 150 children in Gaza. So we are talking about a criminal record of this government, Netanyahu others.
But now between Al-Qassam videos that we just highlighted and we've seen on the television and the Yemeni missiles, how do you see the future of Israel plus the demonstrations?
Well, we know that Israel is very weak in this position because
of
Gaza
and Yemen. But some say that they still have a lot of support by the Israelis.
They have support from the United States. If it were not for the United States' help to this entity, Israel would leave, or the Israelis would leave in days.
So you don't agree that most of the Israelis support Benjamin Netanyahu
and his
own
government? Not at all. They have seen some of the, I would say not achievements, some of their goals. They killed, they massacred, they ruined. They have done a very bad and satanic work. But there is, but what's been covered by the United States is these crimes against the criminal court, against the international courts in general, not only the amnesty and the international court of.
We are talking about
many ramifications of what has happened in Gaza and in Lebanon, and it will reflect itself in the future in the international community, in the political understanding of the role of Israel.
However, if it were not for
Trump, we will not have seen any kind of these atrocities in the south or in Gaza.
Okay. However, the renewed war on Gaza is pointless. For this reason, many soldiers refuse to join the Israeli army and return to Gaza. What's your opinion on the many Israeli soldiers that are refusing to go back to the war on Gaza, especially after the resumption of the ground assault?
Well, we know that Netanyahu is really perplexed and he doesn't know what to do in terms of what Trump wants from him in order to ruin or to strike against Hamas, because Trump want Hamas and Hezbollah and other resistance powers in the region to be struck. But Netanyahu has a problem in terms of the hostages, in terms of the Israelis inside Gaza. So we are seeing here about, let's just say, 73,000 of the Israeli soldiers were in Gaza and participated in this war in Gaza or in Lebanon. And they have problems, either killed or kidnapped or handicapped or being amputated or many things. So if they have seen this catastrophes from their colleagues and their their teams, they would really,
and that's what explains why they're discouraged to actually and be involved again in this.
Culturally, soldiers will be hesitant to go into war in terms of.
Yes, we will see how this case will develop, especially when it comes to the ground incursion, Dr. Mohsen. Yeah. However, in any case, the war on Gaza was reignited by Netanyahu for political reasons, not to secure the release of the captives who are now at risk of death. Therefore, captives must be freed through an agreement, not military force, according to a former Knesset member. Meanwhile, Israeli social media has been focusing on Netanyahu's actions domestically, particularly his repeated dismissals of officials, including the head of the Shin Bet and the legal advisor. Here are some of the comments.
Nati Mizrahi. As you can see, we have moved past the phase of Netanyahu is corrupt, a traitor, and is destroying everything. There is only one enemy that must be eliminated immediately, and that is Netanyahu. Itamar. Netanyahu is drowning up to his neck in all the problems, and he is pushing Israel to the edge of the abyss. And when everything collapses around him, he will have no choice but to flee at the last moment. Talia Ilan. Benjamin Netanyahu is the greatest anti-Semite on the face of the earth.
Well, a fierce campaign, obviously, against Netanyahu on social media platforms by Israeli activists with direct accusations, as we can see, that he wants to destroy the Israeli entity and its institutions. How would you comment on that?
Well, many they say that. And, of course, it seems that Netanyahu is moved by the political agenda of his party and his colleagues of the rightist wings of the Israeli cabinet. So we see Smotrich, Ben-Gvir, and these. That's why we see this this anti-official Shin Bet chief. Even the army, we see that how he asked for example Gallant to resign, how he asked Shin Bet chief to resign and others to also leave.
Yes.
Some of the generals after this new commander in chief. So we are talking here about a political agenda of Netanyahu. When Sara Netanyahu talked to people and say, well, Netanyahu will stay in the government for 10 more years. So we are talking here about a greediness of Netanyahu's family and Netanyahu's cabinet in order to fix and to engrave many of his parties inside this government for financial and for political and for.
But obviously, these decisions are not gaining the approval of many Israelis.
Well,
as
that's
it is
why
obvious
they say. That's why
platform.
they say
they're accusing him of destroying the institution.
He is destroying, because despotism doesn't leave any place for political maneuvers or for political parties if it's a democracy.
Yes.
So they are claiming or pretend that it's a democracy, but actually they are going like many other places in the Arab world and even in the United States. Now we have a new dictator. Trump is a dictator now in the United States. Well, leaving this and appointing this and asking this to resign, and what he has done in his first stage. So we are talking here about Netanyahu emulating Trump. And
moving to the major concern of the Zionists, the Yemeni front. Missiles have resumed raining down on Israeli territory following the renewed aggression on Gaza. This prompted a military analyst in the Hebrew media to express Israeli helplessness in the face of these missiles. So obviously there is no solution for the Yemeni missiles.
What?
Neither Israeli nor American attacks have managed to deter Yemen, as an Israeli commentator says.
They can't. They should read the history of the Yemenis, their mentality, their culture, how they are courageous, how dare they are to this extent that they would challenge Israel and the United States and even the West when they take such steps, such military steps inside the sea, the Red Sea and the Shatt al-Arab. So we are talking about courageous people. They challenge all these political agenda of the Americans.
And the Israelis and the Americans are unaware of what this that you're highlighting, this courageousness that you're highlighting.
It seems that they are not aware because the British haven't told them that they have been defeated in Yemen. And many of other powers, international powers, they were defeated in Yemen. The Houthis are continuing, and they believe that that's very essential and substantial in their mentality and in their doctrine, so they won't stop.
Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, thank you very much for joining us
in
this episode. It's always nice having you.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir. Log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I. knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. As the month of Ramadan is winding down, this is a very sad time for the believers. Because if we were to understand how great the month of Ramadan truly was, we wish it would last the entire month. Because we are the guests of Allah, because this is His month. Therefore, when the month of Ramadan comes to an end, some people are worrying about what are they going to do afterwards? What's going to happen to their spirituality afterwards? To address this question, there is positive news. That now that we have purified ourselves, we have done repentance, we have sought the forgiveness of God, we have done many different acts of worship, we are now in a better position to continue our spiritual journey after the month of Ramadan. That we should not make the month of Shawwal a month that we are now relaxed, a month that if I followed and obeyed the commands of God during the month of Ramadan, that now I can be much more relaxed in the month of Shawwal. That should not be true. Because when a person acts and performs amal as-salih, good actions, genuine actions, that itself is a nur, that itself is a light. And that's going to guide them spiritually towards a higher level. Therefore, now that we have all these great actions, because the night of Qadr, the actions are worth more than 80 years of worship. Now that we have put these actions behind us, and now that we have performed these actions, we have light, we have nur, and that we have a better chance to increase our spirituality after the month of Ramadan. When we look at one of the traditions from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth Imam, he has narrated to us that, "Udu anfusakum al khair." Get yourself accustomed to khair. In the holy month of Ramadan, how much have we gotten accustomed to reciting the Holy Quran? It's much easier for us now. So when you're accustomed to something, it's much easier for you to go on the same track and continue reading the Holy Quran and make it part of your daily routine. When we think about our prayers that we did, when we think about that connection that we had, when we think about fasting, even recommended fasting, it's much easier for us to continue the same track that we had. Because this is how spirituality works. When you get accustomed to something, it's much easier for you for it to occur, and you don't even think about it anymore. Those that have performed mustahabat and recommended deeds, and they have gotten themselves used to it, it becomes for them very natural, and they don't even think about doing those mustahab things. For example, having wudu when you go outside, having wudu and having ablution, and you're always cleansed and pure. It becomes something second nature for us. So this is the good, glad tidings that we have, that after the month of Ramadan ends, we have a new light, we have more nur, and we are more accustomed to doing good. We're accustomed to going to the masjid. Let's not break this habit. Some of these habits that we have now are good habits. And the other narrations, it says, "Man ya'mal yazdad quwwatan," from Imam Ali alayhi salam. When a person acts, he becomes stronger. We are now much more stronger. The way that we can fight against our nafs, we can fight against our lower desires, we are much more stronger. We had taken away water and drink and food from ourselves. Therefore, we are the most powerful people when it comes to fighting our nafs and our lower desires. We are stronger. And if a person, man yughassir fil amal yazdad fatra, if a person has shortcomings in his actions, he becomes weaker. So after the month of Ramadan, this is when a believer should shine the most. This is when a believer continues. Because the stages of spirituality happen slowly, and slowly you increase your connection to God and you reach a higher level. Let's not go back down and think that the month of Ramadan has ended, therefore I'm going to be and go back to the same person I used to be. You are now a new person. Let's continue and strive and progress in the path of spirituality. after the month of Ramadan.
قال الإمام الحسن عليه السلام: التفكر حياة قلب البصير.
Imam Hassan alayhi salam said, "Thinking is the life of the heart of the cognizant."
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah.
The bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio.
Hi, everyone. Judge Andrew Napolitano here for Judging Freedom. Ambassador Charles Freeman will be with us in just a moment. Some interesting questions for the ambassador. If the United States and Israel attack Iran, what will Russia do? And, oh, Pete Hegseth, you don't even know who you're killing? You don't even know who the Houthis are? Ambassador Freeman, welcome here. My dear friend, thank you for coming on early this morning. What is to be gained militarily by the United States, if anything, by bombing civilians in Yemen?
Judging by the record, absolutely nothing. Yemen has been bombed by us on behalf of the Saudis. The Saudis have bombed it. We've bombed it with the British. The Yemenis just take it and keep going. They have stood up. They're the only Arab country to have actually taken action in response to the genocide in Gaza, and they're not going to relent. Bombing them is feel-good diplomacy. It is not anything, it's performative, it's not really purposeful.
Is it more likely than not that they are funded by Iran?
No, Iran does support them, but they're very independent-minded. You know, anybody who, when you read the newspapers, you see the Iran-backed Houthis. But, you know, the same thing should be done with Israel, the American-backed Israelis.
Right.
Does that mean the Israelis don't make their own decisions? No, it doesn't.
A revelation was made by the editor of the Atlantic Monthly magazine that he was apparently inadvertently included in a series of text chats that involved the senior national security people in the Trump administration, Vice President Vance, Secretary of State Rubio, Secretary of Defense Hegseth, National Security Advisor Mike Waltz, and others, as they were debating the desirability of bombing the Houthis and trying to come to a consensus with which to advise President Trump. It appears from the transcript of this, well, first of all, it appears that it's authentic, that this did happen, as unusual as this is. Well, let me ask you, how unusual is this? Have you ever heard of this happening? Where classified plans kill people, would be shared with a person who doesn't have a top secret security clearance.
No, absolutely not. This is a repetition of what Hillary Clinton was charged with, and that is using her cell phone for classified purposes. There are, the U.S. government has elaborate video conferencing mechanisms which are secure, and that is the normal way in which policy has been debated between principals of the government. This is exceptional. I think it's unprecedented. And the leak, the fact that they included a journalist, the editor of The Atlantic, in their group, is absolutely the sloppiest thing you can imagine.
Vice President Vance seemed to be arguing against bombing the Houthis. The others were in favor of it, but perhaps the most extraordinary statement on there came from Secretary of Defense Hegseth. Full disclosure, Pete and I have been friends for years. We don't agree on many things, but we worked together for 10 years at Fox. His now wife was my boss for a short time at Fox, and we're both graduates of Princeton University, and we have a lot of mutual friends, just for full disclosure. But what he said was scurrilous, in my view. He is reported to have said, the problem is nobody knows who the Houthis are. So just say Biden failed and Iran funded them. Good Lord, is that the way the government makes decisions when it comes to killing people?
Well, it is really disgusting, mainly because what that is the development of a public relations strategy, not a foreign policy strategy. It's not aimed at doing anything in the real world. It's aimed at befuddling the American public, and very explicitly so. So these are the themes that have to be stressed in communication with the American public. Nothing, by the way, about international publics who see through this.
Here's the press caught up with Secretary of Defense Hegseth at an air base in Hawaii yesterday. You probably won't believe his answer, but here it is, cut number 14.
Can you share how your information about war plans against the Houthis in Yemen was shared with a journalist in The Atlantic? And were those details classified?
You're talking about a deceitful and highly discredited so-called journalist who's made a profession of peddling hoaxes time and time again, to include the hoaxes of Russia, 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 or the fine people on both sides hoax, or suckers and losers hoax. So this is a guy that peddles in garbage. This is what he does. I would love to comment on the Houthi campaign because of the skill and courage of our troops. I've monitored it very closely from the beginning. And you see, we've been managing 4 years of deferred maintenance under the Trump administration. Our troops, our sailors were getting shot at as targets. Our ships couldn't sail through. And when they did shoot back, it was purely defensively or at shacks in Yemen. President Trump said, no more. We will reestablish deterrence. We will open freedom of navigation. And we will ultimately decimate the Houthis, which is exactly what we're doing as we speak from the beginning, overwhelmingly.
Well, A, I don't think it's true that they're decimating the Houthis. B, this is just an absurd answer. Open mouth, insert foot.
Well, there are lots of things wrong with that. I'm no fan of Jeffrey Goldberg, who is the editor of The Atlantic, but he is a serious, well-regarded journalist. He, in fact, redacted much of the report that he wrote on this extraordinarily inept disclosure of classified information. And he did so on the grounds that it would hurt the United States. So far from being irresponsible in terms of protecting American interests, he leaned over backwards, probably much more than any journalist should, to ensure that the damage was as limited as it could be. The second point is, of course, that it's absolute nonsense to say that the Biden administration was acting, quote, defensively at getting shot at it was acting to suppress the Houthis' effort to conduct a blockade in the Red Sea against any support, whether Israeli or aligned with Israel, any support for the genocide in Gaza. When the Israelis temporarily paused the genocide in the so-called ceasefire, which they then violated, the Houthis stood down. So this is not the sort of silly game that Mr. Hegseth portrayed it as. And it's clear from the earlier statement, from the discussion itself, that he doesn't have a clue who the Houthis are. So this is an extraordinarily inept, emotional response to a reasonable question.
Who are the Houthis?
The Houthis are a group of a religious group in Yemen. They are tribally based. They have become very assertive, mostly against the Saudis. They control the greater part of the traditional Yemeni territory. They are, for all intents and purposes, the government of Yemen, and they are very tough. The Saudi effort to dominate them failed. Our efforts to get them to stop their assaults on the Israeli bound traffic in the Red Sea have failed. They have openly declared us to be the enemy, and the British, the U.S. and British navies are in the Red Sea attacking them. Nothing defensive about it. And so, you know, and of course, the whole Yemen exercise under Biden and now under Trump is utterly unconstitutional. We are conducting a war against the state of Yemen, even if we don't recognize the Houthis as such. When we went to war with the Barbary pirates, Thomas Jefferson took that issue to the Congress, because the Congress has the power to declare war. We have not declared war on anybody. We're just bombing people.
And are we demolishing them, according to Scott Ritter and Larry Johnson and Doug McGregor? The answer is no, but from your sources, are we demolishing them, as Hegseth claimed in that rant on the tarmac in Hawaii that we just watched?
I'm sure we're killing people, a lot of them civilians. We're probably killing some of the Houthi leadership, but we are not decimating them, the word he used. In fact, the main result of this behavior by us and the Houthis' stand against it has been to raise the prestige of the Houthis throughout the entire Arab and Islamic world. They are seen as victims of American support for Israel.
Switching gears slightly, although of course it's all connected, does Iran pose any threat? I almost feel ridiculous asking you this, to the national security of the United States.
No, it poses a threat to any country in West Asia that aspires to hegemony there. And that has, in the past, the Saudis were such an aspirant. They were in a contest with Iran for influence throughout the region. Israel is now has now established dominance of the Levant. It has gutted Syria of all ability to defend itself. It has taken part of Lebanon as its expanded territory. And of course, it's conducted a genocide in Gaza, and it is currently conducting a somewhat less brutal eviction of the Palestinians from the occupied territories in the West Bank. So Iran is certainly a threat to Israeli dominance of the region. It is the designated enemy of Israel. That is, Israel has proclaimed it to be an existential threat. And the main issue is Iran's nuclear program. There is still no evidence that there is a nuclear weapons program, that a decision has been made by Iran to build a nuclear weapon clandestinely, as of course Israel did, while assuring us constantly at the time that it was not doing what it was doing. So there is an issue of non-proliferation here, but it's a bit murky. Neither